Ryan Dixon and Rory Boylan host Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.
I'd like to formally welcome John Tavares and his fiancée Erin to our organization. It's a very exciting day for us as we continue to move towards our ultimate goal and continue with our process here.
It was hard to turn down this opportunity. It's obviously one of the premier organizations, not just in hockey, but in sports. And as a kid, cheering for the Leafs growing up, you start to get those feelings again once I went through the interview process and got that. And just, I thought the timing was too good and it was an opportunity I didn't want to turn down. And very fortunate to be here and happy to call myself a Maple Leaf.
Welcome to Tape to Tape. T2T. I'm Ryan Dixon. I'm a writer for Sportsnet.ca. With me in the studio, as always, it's Sportsnet NHL editor Rory Boylan.
You know, Ryan, even though there's no games going on right now, this is one of my favorite times of the year. It's like fantasy hockey, anything goes. Guys are moving via free agency, via trade. I have a year-long fantasy hockey pool that I'm in, and I'm talking trade right now, and I feel like I'm getting right in on everything that's going on in the NHL right now, having these similar kind of deliberations, conversations with the guys I'm competing against as to what's going on in the NHL right now, and we'll see where the musical chairs end in October, who's got what those predictions look like, but it's been a really fantastic summer of movement so far.
It's one of those things where you feel like you have to refresh Twitter every 5 minutes because yep. You just never know exactly what will happen, and boy oh boy, yes, we have seen some monumental moves. We are, of course, going to talk about the enormous John Tavares signing by the Toronto Maple Leafs. We will take a look all around the league and talk about some of the biggest moves that have happened so far. We have to add so far, and let us just tell you, dear listener, we're going to save the Ottawa Senators portion of this podcast for the last second, just in case.
We're going to record,
just
re-record
in case
that.
Something officially breaks on the Erik Karlsson front. As of right now, he still is with the Ottawa Senators, but it sure sounds like Steve Yzerman, maybe Jim Neal of the Dallas Stars, are at the door. Man, it is going to be, given all that's gone on in Ottawa, it will be very interesting to see what the return for one of the craziest offensive wizards from the blue line we've ever seen, what they can get for this guy while he is still a relatively young player. I think Rory will check in with every Canadian team as well, whether they've done a lot or a little, just to gauge what's going on in those markets. But let's start with the biggest market and the biggest free agent signing in years and years and years and years. Where were you on this 6 months ago? Because I will out myself right now as someone who thought when John Tavares' name came up, I honestly gave it a shrug in the Leafs context. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, they have forwards. They have centers. They need the cap space. They need to deploy their resources somewhere else. And as things went along, I sort of became converted to the line of thinking that went, you know what? If you have an opportunity to put this guy on your team, you put him on and figure out the rest.
Yep.
I'm guessing that's where you land on this as well.
When it first started to be serviced, first of all, I thought this is the same storyline we get every time somebody of his ilk becomes, like, everybody's coming to Toronto.
Can I jump back in? Yeah. I will say, too, I thought Stamkos was coming. I didn't think Tavares was for a number of reasons, but I did think that Stamkos probably was going to. But in this case, I was like, I just don't know if this one makes sense.
Yeah, and I was there, too. I didn't know if this one made sense. Like you said, they needed defensemen. They already had the number one centerman to move into the future
with. You could have Matthews,
how is it gonna fit?
Matthews, Kadri, and Nylander if you moved him in as your 1-2-3.
Sure, and that would have been fantastic. But now I started to be converted as well, and now that the salary has come in at $11 million against the cap, I also assumed if you were to win Tavares from the Islanders or from some other competing team like the Tampa Bay Lightning especially, who can offer some great taxes for you, I thought Toronto was going to have to overpay for a guy like Tavares. And that would mean, you know, maybe giving him $12.5, $13 million a year, getting up to that Connor McDavid, maybe a little bit more, considering that the salary cap was also going to come up. Now we know what his motivations were. You know, he wanted to come play in Toronto. The situation for him is just right in that they are just budding as a team. He himself mentioned at his press conference the strong Calder Cup winning season from the Toronto Marlies and how that paints a very rosy picture to move into the future with. So not everybody who becomes available wants to come to Toronto, and the timing has not really been right a lot of these years, but it just seemed to be the right spot. And now I look at this and I see John Tavares, Austin Matthews, and Nazem Kadri, who I am absolutely not trading $4.5 million for a guy who can score 30 goals. Maybe he doesn't get there as your third line center. That's perfectly fine. He's becoming better as a defensive center, but having those three guys down your middle is, I mean, I can't off the top of my head think of a threesome that's better. Pittsburgh definitely has the better twosome. I don't know if Derek Brassard is better than Nazem Kadri right now. That's up for debate. That's what this league is built on. The winners have great centers. You can figure out your wingers. You can figure out your defense as long as you have a decent base like the Leafs do. And I look at this team and I think now, man, this is a team really built to win. They still have salary cap space this summer to work with. Obviously, there's looming cap considerations, but Kyle Dubas was on the 31 Thoughts podcast and he doesn't seem to think that there's going to be any problem keeping all of these guys, Marner, Nylander, Austin Matthews, on the roster along with Tavares.
Well, the irony is when the Leafs are good, eyeballs go up, revenue goes up, and so that means the cap goes up, right? They can kind of drive it up themselves in a roundabout way. It was a perfect storm, and the thing we never really knew for sure, or even close to for sure, is to what degree did this player want to play for his boyhood team, right? And you're right. Of course, people take flack for suggesting, you know, such and such guy from the GTA will want to come. I'm sure there are a lot of guys who, I mean, just by virtue of the fact it's a huge place, there's a lot of players who come from here. Everyone can understand why someone would be kind of curious about, hey, what about playing at home? But the reality is for so many guys who grew up around here, coming here at different times previous to this era was going to mean some hardship. It wasn't definitely going to be a case where you were competing for the Stanley Cup. That is the case now. Mm-hmm. And when you add up, like you said, you know, a guy who he's looking at it as, you know, this is the team I grew up rooting for. They're on the cusp of something and appear to be set up for a long time to come with the AHL team and the young core. You know, now is the time to make, if ever you're going to do it, now's the time. The stars lined up. I want to throw a couple things at you. One Leaf related, one Islanders related. First one, Leafs. Do you think this is the summer, assuming he wants it, to give Austin Matthews the captaincy to sort of say, look, we brought in the new guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a huge part of this. We know all the Leaf players were ecstatic to get Tavares, but is this a way to reassure Matthews that you're the guy we drafted, you're the guy we still are really is at the epicenter of all this, mm-hmm. and after 2 years, we're ready to symbolically acknowledge you as the leader of this ship?
I don't think I would give him the captaincy. I think Kyle Dubas talked about at John Tavares' press conference, both of them said that that wasn't ever discussed. Who knows if it was off the record? But he said that they weren't ready to hand out the captaincy yet. And in his experiences, things only go wrong when you kind of rush into these things. And I think you would be rushing into it if you gave Austin Matthews the captaincy, certainly before he signs an 8-year extension or something like
sure.
that, right? So assuming you're giving him this C after he signed his contract.
With for the exact same cap hit, maybe,
probably.
As Tavares,
yeah,
right?
Like, you can't imagine him going above Tavares, and maybe that's probably what he comes in at, is right at 11. But I still think that Tavares is going to end up as the captain at some point. I don't really buy the notion that Austin Matthews is ice time is going to take a back seat to John Tavares. I think in today's NHL, and especially when you have the depth of talent Toronto has, you don't want to, and in their situation, you don't need to load up one center with 22 minutes of average ice time. You can come down a couple minutes, spread out that ice between the two of them a little bit more. And then when it comes to the power play, you can use them on the same power play unit. So Austin Matthews is getting just as much time on the man advantage as he did last year, maybe even more with this super line that they could create. So I think overall, it's probably going to average out pretty closely to even between the two. I really don't see this as him taking a backseat. One of them is going to draw the opposition's top checkers. The other one's going to be a little bit more free to take on the secondary lines and probably dominate those. So one game it might be Tavares, the next team might want to do it against Austin Matthews depending on how they play. So I don't think that he's going to be turned off by this. If he gets paid $11 million and the Leafs are set up to win forever, I really think that's going to be the bottom line here. But I think when it comes to dealing with the media, the experience and all that, everything backs Tavares being the next captain of this team. I'm not sure if it's going to happen this year or not, but to me, I think that's where this ends up. I don't think you have to give it to Austin Matthews just to show him that you're acknowledging he's still here.
So this is devastating for the Islanders. I think we all understand that.
Really? Man, I can't think of a worse week for... I just remember back to when they hired Barry Trotz and seeing all the Islanders fans like, he wanted to come here. This is a turning point here. Guys want to come here now. And there are all the reports that Tavares was going to re-sign, and it was so optimistic. And then Tavares signs in Toronto, and they sign Leo Komarov. They make all these just... really
reactionary, questionable
fourth line signings. Yeah, and it's just, man, that took a really bad turn very quickly for the Islanders.
Well, maybe you won't follow me on this journey then, but I would say this if you're an Islanders fan, and I understand it's cold comfort, and again, this is galling, but if you go back through the Tavares era, they draft him first overall in 2009, you know, basically throughout his whole time there up until the very end. You're talking about a team that had a fantastic number one center, but always had questionable ownership, questions about the building, always had a hint of dysfunction around it. Now he's gone, and that sucks. But you have solid ownership. You have a firm plan for shovels to go in the ground and get a new arena. You have the rookie of the year in Matt Barzal. You just had probably one of the best drafts. I mean, they are listed as winners on basically everyone's draft takeaway by getting Wahlstrom and Noah Dobson 11th and 12th overall. Though it's very hard to feel good today, could you make a case that the Islanders are actually better set up long term now than they ever actually were during the time Tavares was there? Because I'd rather have solid ownership, and the moves of this week notwithstanding, credible management in Lou Lamoriello and a coach in Barry Trotz, I'd rather have that than a superstar surrounded by dysfunction.
Look, it's a bad week. It's going to be a bad year for the Islanders. It's probably going to be a bad year even next season, too, in 2019-20. I don't see how they can turn it around that fast. But yeah, you're right. In the long term, I believe in Lou Lamoriello. I don't know how you can't at this point, that he knows how to build things. And they had that successful draft. I mean, Sebastian Aho, one of their defensemen, I mean, he looks good too. Like, there are players who are under 24 years old in this system or on this roster right now that do give you some hope that it's going to turn around. Now, like Mike Babcock said when he came to Toronto, there's going to be a lot of pain before you get there. You have to imagine they're going to be picking high in the draft again next year. I mean, Andrew Ladd is signed for $5.5 million for another five seasons. That's going to be a problem. Josh Bailey, I don't know what he's going to be without John Tavares.
Yeah, that's a fair question.
So that's going to be a big problem, too, if he can't produce and he's making $5 million for another six. Jordan Eberle is going to be a UFA next summer. I would think you're probably going to end up having to trade him for some futures. I don't know why he would want to stick around. And that's going to be the other problem, is anytime a UFA comes up here, they're probably going to want to leave this situation right now. This is the whole problem with me, is that they hired Barry Trotz and that was great and everything. And Lou Lamoriello there is promising, but they had some serious on-ice problems that have never been dealt with and certainly weren't dealt with after Tavares went. The defense is still a huge problem. The goaltending, I don't know, Robin Lehner is worth a shot, but it's a one-year deal, and
we'll see
what the heck's going to happen there. It might be just as big of a problem as it was last year, too. If they wanted to set up a situation for Tavares to stay, when the new owners originally took over, they should have been right on that right away, and they weren't. They delayed it and delayed it and delayed it. It's just delaying this whole thing. New York will get back at one point, but again, they're right back basically to where they were when they drafted Tavares 9 years ago. They're going to have to do it all again. But I would agree that there's a better base of prospects to move into the future with. They're just not that, you know, generational number one overall pick guy anymore.
And much better guidance and you know, certainty at the top.
You gotta love Trotz. Like, Trotz is gonna create a good environment for these guys to play in, and gonna create a certain level of expectation. The number one thing for the Islanders, I think, would be to make sure that level of acceptancy of losing doesn't settle in, and I think having Lamoriello and Trotz as your leaders are going to ensure that doesn't happen. So that's also a good spot to start from.
Second best center on the move, Ryan O'Reilly, heavily linked to the Canadiens in Montreal's quest for a top center, ends up going to the Blues, another team that always felt as though it was heavily in the mix. What did you think of the trade that sent O'Reilly West for Vladimir Sobotka, Patrick Berglund, youngster Tage Thompson, a first rounder in 2019, a second rounder in 2021?
I mean, this is a great move for the Blues. Doug Armstrong is all in, right? He's got to win with this team. He's already moved on from a couple coaches. It would seem if they don't build on anything and move forward in the playoffs, his job is probably going to be up next. But now you look at these centers. If you got Braden Schenn, Ryan O'Reilly, and Tyler Bozak, who they got as a free agent, maybe overpaid for him a little bit, but those are three pretty good centers I feel okay with. And then you have the wingers like Jaden Schwartz and Vladimir Tarasenko. I think Ryan O'Reilly probably fits in on your second line behind Braden Schenn, and that is going to create some two pretty good lines. I think St. Louis, I mean, they could be a sneaky team next year. Their goaltending is okay, and Jake Allen's got to prove that he can do it for a full season. You got to love their defense. They have so many assets, they could move one of those defensemen to improve somewhere else or to give themselves some more depth if they really wanted to. But there's a phenomenal top four for them to move on with here. Vince Dunn is a guy who's going to probably take another step forward next year. He got some NHL exposure this past season. The Blues, to me, Ryan O'Reilly is going to do a heck of a lot more for that Blues team than he was in Montreal, where he was just going to
I don't know why you're leaving Buffalo for Montreal.
Yeah, like what was he going to do for Montreal? What I like about O'Reilly, though, I think he kind of flew under the radar in Buffalo because they were so bad. I think he's going to be appreciated more if the Blues can get into the playoffs and people see him on a higher stage a lot more. He's a phenomenal two-way player, barely takes any penalties at all, which is amazing considering how much he has to, considering his strength is on the defensive side of the puck, and he's a great playmaker too. So if he does start on the second line, maybe he ends up with Vladimir Tarasenko at some point this season, and that sniping ability along with O'Reilly's playmaking would be a great combination. But the only thing about the Blues is that the Central Division is so stacked. I can't right now figure which two of these teams, or maybe three, are not going to make the playoffs next year. Colorado was supposed to be the easy one to pick last year, and they ended up making the playoffs. What happens to Minnesota? Chicago even could be a team that bounces back. So it's just kind of, where do the Blues end up sliding in a really deep division?
Buffalo, probably a move it had to make given the O'Reilly state of mind. I don't think there's anything wrong with that return. And, you know, they probably were never going to get Jordan Kyrou or Robert Thomas, the real cream of the crop prospects for St. Louis. And you know what? That first rounder, I believe Buffalo now has three in 2019. If the Sabres take a step this year, hey man, you ball up two of those first rounders at the draft next year, and you go get a top four defenseman who becomes available. So I think it made sense from both sides. Let's run through the Canadian teams. We'll group them according to essentially how much there is to talk about surrounding each team. And again, you may have thought I was joking, listeners, but I wasn't. We're saving Ottawa for the end, just in case. We're giving ourselves every last minute here. But we mentioned Montreal in terms of O'Reilly, so we might as well jump in there. The hilarious thing is, I actually think for a little while prior to the news we saw recently about Shea Weber, if you were following the Canadiens' Twitter or the chatter around the Canadiens, there was maybe mild optimism that the team had finally sorted out a path for itself or was changing its ways a little bit. They had 11 picks at the draft. Some of the guys they drafted in 2017 look maybe even a little further ahead than they thought. There was just a whiff of optimism, long-term optimism around the team. Then the news comes out that Shea Weber went in for routine arthroscopic surgery on his knee. He, of course, was already expected to be out for a long time with his foot injury that kept him out last year. They get in there. Lo and behold, they decide that more work needs to be done in the knee, and he's going to be out until about Christmas. The Canadiens decide not to tell anyone about this for 3 weeks through the draft and free agency with some flimsy rationale about it being too much of a distraction. And now, somewhat predictably, they're getting eviscerated for this. And our own Eric Engels is saying, essentially, Marc Bergevin was selling a fantasy when he said the Canadiens are going to compete or try to compete for a playoff spot. I just will never understand why teams are so loath to level with fans and talk to them like adults and say, look, here's what's going on. We got to change something. We need a little reset here. We're certainly going to go out and fight every night with the guys we have, but we have to be realistic. Right now, it makes the most sense to audition our young players in this league that is increasingly skewing young. why not just say that instead of pitch Weber's absence as an opportunity for one of our fine young guys to show something instead of being secretive about it?
Yeah, why can't you be like the Rangers and the Canucks and say,
write a stupid letter.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. I think the situation in Montreal is a little bit different in that Bergevin has been all in on this team, and almost every move he made, starting with the Subban Weber one, kind of shortened their window. Yeah. And so he really committed himself to this window. I mean, it's closed now, right?
It closed so hard the glass shattered.
Yeah, it's finally closed. So for him to make the moves that he's made over the last couple of years and then to this summer come in and say, okay, we're going to rebuild and focus on prospects, I mean, that would just be a clear sign of he doesn't know what the heck's going on. There is no direction from the GM. And I think that would be a problem for his own job security, even though that should probably already be a case
well,
right
yeah,
now.
Well, yeah, you never would have thought he would get to be the guy who would rebuild things back up, right? You assume that would have been someone else.
I wouldn't feel confident about leaving Bergevin to be the guy to build this back up after these moves. He committed to this. It didn't work out. I think it might be time to move on to somebody else. The problem with if you want to try and rebuild through the draft and get a good pick or whatever is Carey Price is still there. He's making $10.5 million. I think on its own, considering his injury history, that would be a tough one to move if you ever had to explore doing that. I don't know if you're going to get back that same value or not. I'm not saying that they should explore that yet, but what I'm saying is if he's healthy, him on his own is going to make it tough for you to tank because he's the best goalie in the world when he is on top of his game and 100% healthy. So if he is that, you're automatically stuck in the middle here.
If he is healthy, he's preventing you from drafting high. If he's not healthy, he's a goalie on a $10 million a year contract. You can't move.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then what's this? What is it going to look like 4 or 5 years from now? Like, you just don't know. It could be a great fit for what you're doing, and it could be just a huge problem contract. And that combined with Weber's that you don't have a number one center, although maybe Ryan Poehling becomes that. Who knows what happens with Jonathan Drouin at this point? What do you get back from Max Pacioretty in a trade, which I assume still has to happen here at some point?
It's amazing we haven't even gotten to that yet.
Yeah, but even him, like, you know, he's a winger. He's on a down year. Going into the last year of his contract, what really are you going to get back from a trade for him? I would think that that value is just going down and down and down the closer you get to the season. It's probably less than it was at the trade deadline where an acquiring team would have two runs with him. But, I mean, we'll see. Can't judge that until we see what the return is. But it's just, man, they're really caught in the middle with the players that they've got and that they're not really, they don't look like a Buffalo where there's absolutely no hope, but they also don't look like a team on the rise like Toronto has been in the last couple of years where you can see the future. With that said, I need to say, if Max Pacioretty comes back, if Jonathan Drouin fits in at center, Carey Price is healthy, I can see a path to the playoffs for this team, which is crazy. I can't imagine myself actually picking that, but if all goes well, this team is still a team that could maybe slip into that, and that's really the problem with what's going on right now.
Yeah, you can see a path back to respectability, but what you can't see is a path to an upper-tier contender.
There's no Stanley Cups here.
No, their only hope is that, you know, they have guys in their stable, young players who exceed expectations because they drafted 11 guys in June, you know? Like,
yeah.
I guess if you draft a bunch again next year, maybe within that group, some guys take an unexpected leap, but there's certainly nothing you can hang your hat on there right now. We talked about Calgary on the previous pod where we broke down the Dougie Hamilton trade. Spoiler alert, Rory, not a huge fan. But subsequently, they signed James Neal, so they're going to add some goals to the lineup. You've added Elias Lindholm and James Neal to the forward mix.
Yep.
I don't hate swapping in Noah Hanifin for Dougie Hamilton. Maybe it's not the most prudent move right now from an offensive standpoint, but Noah Hanifin's really just getting it cranked up. Calgary's got pretty serious bounce back potential if Mike Smith once again is a 920 goalie.
Yeah, this team, look at the way their contracts are set up. I mean, Giordano, 4 more years, Gaudreau, Monahan, long-term, Neal, long-term, Michael Backlund, your number two center, long-term. This is the core that they are going to take a couple runs at the Stanley Cup. It's not going to be one. It's going to be a couple that they're set up to do. The number one need for that team in the offseason was a winger to add on to the secondary scoring line. They were a one-line offensive team straight up last year. I love Michael Frolik, but I love him as a third liner and not a second liner. He's just not a goal scorer. He's not going to create the offense. Matthew Tkachuk still seems like he's on the rise, and he's a crap disturber. Michael Backlund is a really great defensive center, but again, he's not going to drive offense for you. He's not going to be your goal scorer who's going to convert. That's what they were missing, and that's what Neil provides. I wouldn't bet on him being a 40-goal scorer or anything like that. He might not even score 30, but he will get you enough goals to support the guys up front on that top line, and that's really what they needed. That's what they got. That could be a contract 3 years from now, $5.75 million. It's not so great anymore, but I'm not really worried about that. This is a team that's all in right now. And so that's just the cost of business when you're trying to fill a hole. You're not going to find one of these guys cheap on trade. You're not going to be able to pick up a James Neal on a value contract on July 1. So you just take the plunge with what you can do, as long as it's not overpaying so drastically it's going to hold you back in other ways. I think 575 for James Neal is a pretty decent cap it for a guy who's going to bring you exactly what you need.
Vancouver is fascinating to me. I've been an enormous Vancouver critic going back, you know, a year or so, 2-3 years, in that I felt like the Canucks were a team that just weren't acknowledging it's done, it's over. You know, you really got to dig in and bite down. And then lo and behold, you know, they find a Besser in the late first round. Elias Pettersson, you know, looks like a steal even at fifth overall. It seems like, you know, there's reason for optimism in Vancouver. They're, you know, legit wave of prospects coming. And then we're kind of back to head scratching with long-term, or at least somewhat lengthy, deals given out to guys who you're happy to have on your team, like Jay Beagle and Antoine Roussel for 4 years. But you just wonder if it's the best way to, number one, deploy your resources, I guess, and number two, is there not guys internally you'd be looking to develop in those spots?
Yeah, I mean, these guys are going to play bottom six roles, and I guess the idea is you don't want four lines of all guys under 24 years old. You want to create an environment where
they're good role models. I mean, a guy like Beagle obviously is super respected.
Sure.
There's no two ways about it.
And I get it. It's just, maybe you had to give them 4 years to get them to come here and not go somewhere else. But can you not go to a team that has a guy like this, that has good leadership qualities or whatever, and is making a little bit too much for a little bit too long for another team, and say, hey, we'll take this contract off your hands. Give us a third round or a fourth round pick on top of that, and we don't have to go out and sign a contract. And in fact, Jim Benning has got a lot of heat for not acquiring more picks than he sent out, even though this team is trying to rebuild. And that would be a way to kind of offset that. You're getting the kind of player that you want, but you're also getting in trade a draft pick, a lottery ticket that hopefully pays off at some point down the road. So you are getting some value to move you in a direction that you want to go, whereas just signing Roussel and Beagle, you're just taking these risks on these players. It's not going to move the needle or anything like that. I mean, I don't feel passionately against these moves because I understand where he's coming from. It's just kind of like, was there not another way that you could have gone about this to get a draft pick? That's the problem that I have with it in the end. But I just don't see these contracts, $3 million, really hampering any future decisions for this team.
When the Jets shipped out Steve Mason along with Joel Armia to Montreal, we all sort of thought, ooh, maybe they're going to be able to hang on to Stastny. He was a wonderful fit on that team. Gave up a first rounder to get him at the deadline. And then lo and behold, Stastny ends up signing with Vegas. I mean, not a huge blow for Winnipeg, but pretty quiet offseason so far for the Jets. They do have Jacob Trouba, 24-year-old RFA. Obviously, there's been some tension between the player and team, and times we thought that player might be moved out. Do you see him signing on for an 8-year deal here this summer?
Well, he had that trade request, which was rescinded after that. We're going to see this summer how rescinded it is. Exactly. If Jacob Trouba signs a 3-year contract, he's going to be a 27-year-old UFA when that comes up.
Tick, 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 tick.
So
on the clock.
Then you're like, okay, when do they trade this guy in the next 3 years? Because that's going to have to happen. Or is this the time that he does lock in for an 8-year deal? I look at Dustin Byfuglien making 7.6 for 3 more years. He's already 33. I don't think he's going to age very well. I think Jacob Trouba is your number one defenseman right now. He is the kind of guy that you need to lock in for 8 years. So now we'll see what happens with that. This summer for Winnipeg was all about their RFA contracts. Connor Hellebuck also needs one. What's that going to look like after one great season where he was a Vezina finalist?
Tough.
Josh Morrissey is another one. I mean, he might be your number two defenseman for the long-term future alongside Jacob Trouba. So do you go bridge deal with him first, or do you go all in with him and lock into this new defense score? there's nobody other than Dustin Byfuglien who's signed longer than 2 years on that blue line right now. So I think you would want to get both of those guys for as long as you can. Next year, anything that you do this summer, you always have to have Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor's RFA extensions, which are going to come in next year, on the mind. How much are those going to cost? I imagine Laine is going to be a ton. It is so beneficial to have Mark Scheifele on a very team-friendly deal, $6.125 million
for
6 more years.
Even Ehlers at six is going to look fantastic.
Yeah, and you have, I imagine, Christian Vesalainen is going to crack this roster in October, and he's coming out of the Finnish league where he was a fantastic scorer. I think he was top five or sixth overall in goals in that league, and he didn't play the full season. A big body. He's going to be a cheap contract who's going to be very productive for this team for a while. You have the option, if you want, of moving Blake Wheeler to center where he had to play when Mark Scheifele was out for injury last year, although that's a great combination with Wheeler on the wing and Scheifele at center. It's just, how do they handle this loss of Stastny? Brian Little obviously is going to be your number two center to start, I think. I don't know if this was the summer that Winnipeg was going to ever do anything really hugely big.
Maybe keeping Stastny was going to be
that
the biggest
thing. That was going to be the biggest thing. And then that would force you into other decisions on maybe you were going to have to move a Matthew Perreault next year or something like that, or maybe even a Brian Little when these other bigger contracts kick in. But I look at this team still, and I think everybody agrees, like, they have an open Stanley Cup window here. They don't need to really blow all their resources yet. They still have so many good prospects that are coming up that they can, you know, they can either move into the lineup in the next year or two or use them in trade that another team finds great value in and add a piece at the deadline next year. So obviously I'm not worried about this team right now. It's just next year they're going to have a cap crunch. And I think that's why they haven't done anything big, is you really have to have that in mind.
Edmonton, we thought, might be one of the teams most willing to move its first round pick, 10th overall, but the way the chips fell, Evan Bouchard, the defenseman from the Knights, fell, and they were kind of rubbing their hands together. Some people, starting with our own Sam Cosentino, I think, believe there's a chance Bouchard could even be ready to go. I think he's a late birthday, might even be ready to go in the fall. Who knows? They're not, you would think they're not going to rush it.
Yeah.
Not a lot going on with the Oilers is the bottom line here. I mean, they're in an interesting spot where 2 years ago they went to the second round, obviously clunked out, but you're running McDavid and Draisaitl out there. Darnell Nurse, who took a big leap last year, needs a new contract. But probably not going to be anything huge from the Oilers. Maybe there's still a chance they find a way to move out the Lucic deal. We'll see.
Yeah, that would be the best thing that they could do, is if they could get rid of that $6 million contract. Just to, it gives them more flexibility in the future, right? And he's really not going to provide anything good for them. I don't see him fitting on a line long term and it turning out well on that second line. He's a third liner right now, so he's making too much money. This is another team that looks like they could bounce back. I think Oscar Klefbom, he was injured last year. I mean, he's got to bounce back. He's got to provide more scoring from that blue line. That should help out their power play a little bit more. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins looked great on Connor McDavid's wing down the stretch last season. So as long as that keeps going, I think you have all the optimism in the world that that could be a very fierce top line.
Nice solution there, too, where there was a whole bunch of talk of, do they move Nugent? Is this the latest trade where you look at it and go, oh, pennies on the dollar?
Exactly.
It's a smart two-way player. Nice to find a way to keep him in the fold and in an important role.
And he's a first overall pick. He's signed for a while. Like, this is a good base to go out from. He can skate with Connor McDavid. He's got the skill, high-end skill that you need to play with Connor McDavid. High-end IQ. I mean, it's a perfect fit there. I think an X factor here for the Oilers is Jesse Puljujärvi, because now you need that winger with Leon Draisaitl. Can Puljujärvi be that guy who takes the step, be another big body to line up there with Draisaitl? Maybe Tobias Reeder gets a look there, who was unqualified by the Los Angeles Kings. So he became an unrestricted free agent and the Oilers brought him back. He seems to be one of those, you throw $2 million at him, you see what he's got. He can skate. He has the upside of 20 goals. He'll probably come in somewhere closer to 15 or 16 as his career average would dictate. But if he can find something and he can be that speedy winger to play maybe even on that top line, but at least with Draisaitl, then you found something for nothing there, and that's what the Oilers need to find. And really, when it comes down to it, Cam Talbot needs to be better in net, too.
So I've been joking the whole podcast about Ottawa. I've been refreshing Twitter for half an hour.
Nothing?
No Erik Karlsson trade. at this moment, it seems like Tampa Bay is the most likely destination for a number of reasons. I feel like that makes a lot of sense. I think I'm on record even going months back to the trade deadline. I would trade Mikhail Sergachev for Erik Karlsson if I'm Tampa Bay, because I have to believe that Karlsson would be happy to sign an 8-year extension to stay with a great team in Florida with his good Swedish buddy Hedman. Yep. All of a sudden you got, at least for one more year, Hedman, Strahlman, McDonough, Karlsson as a top four. I think I can bid adieu to Sergachev, great as he is. And I mean, not taking into account the pieces Tampa would have to move around to clear out some space. I mean, if you're Ottawa, the way things have gone right now, like if you're a Sens fan and I say to you, one for one, Sergachev for Karlsson, you might actually take that at this point, wouldn't you? Like, honestly.
You would have to think about it, because if you wait until the trade deadline, what are you going to
get? And you look at what happened with Mike Hoffman, like, you know?
Yeah, you don't want this to blow up. I mean, that's still, even though Hoffman's gone, this is still a storyline. And if he is just done with Ottawa and he can't play there anymore, he can't live there anymore, if that story were ever come out and become public, you're not going to get Mikhail Sergachev for him. You are going to be trading him for pennies on the dollar. So, yeah, I would look at that. And my question with Dallas is, do you give up Miro Heiskanen for him?
So that's... I think Tampa, because the Bolts are closer to a cup than Dallas, if I'm the Stars, I could see balking more because I still think they need more components. So I'm going to keep that top prospect and the other pieces. I still need to build a broader base. I mean, I understand it's Erik Karlsson, but this is no slight on Sergachev, who would be traded in consecutive summers. It would just, that would be a case of people desire just wonky circumstances. Yep. People desire the player, and he's going to be fantastic. But I think for Tampa Bay, because Karlsson is, you know, 27, not 32, I could swallow that. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens with Mark Stone as an RFA. And if there's any funny business there where it seems like he doesn't really want to stick around.
Yeah. The key with Mark Stone now, at least he can't be offered an offer sheet. That was the big thing hanging over this this summer, is that, okay, he needed a contract, and if he didn't elect to go to arbitration, now he can get an offer sheet, and there, I mean, maybe Colorado could move in on that, right? Because they have Ottawa's first round pick. They could give up their own. There are a number of teams that could have made it really difficult on the Ottawa Senators. So at least you don't have that threat anymore. So maybe you still have to do like a trading him. Maybe he doesn't want to be here. The other thing about that arbitration is that he'll get a 1-year contract out of that, unless he negotiates something else with the Senators. Arbitration is a little strange because you have all these cases that are going to be out there. Very few of them, if ever, actually get
process.
There. They come to an agreement on a contract. So now if you're an Ottawa Senators fan, you're looking for that contract to come before arbitration, and that would make you feel better, because if you do go to arbitration with this one, he's going to walk out of there with a 1-year deal, and he'll be an unrestricted free agent next summer. And that's a whole other problem that you have to deal with. So on one hand, it's good that he's not going to have to deal with an offer sheet, but on the other hand, you are dealing with this looming problem of maybe having Matt Duchene and Mark Stone as UFAs next summer, and there's a no-win situation there.
I think the term tire fire has been thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Oh, my. Like, one goal away from the Stanley Cup final last year, and now, I mean, it's just off the rails in Ottawa.
What is Matt Duchene thinking? I mean, I hope he's on a dock and enjoying the sun, but my goodness, what? I mean, and really, the way things, I mean, assuming Karlsson is moved, can you not make a case that Ottawa should just go all in on this and see what you could get for Duchene, even see what you could get for Stone? I know it's easier to say as a guy in a booth than to execute as a NHL GM, but I look at that division and I'm like, how are you going to beat Tampa and Toronto? And Buffalo's already got these great components. You need those components.
Yeah.
You need to go out there and get 3 first-round picks in the next 2 drafts, and you do have these assets that could return something, but I just have no idea what team you're running out there with Stone and Duchene.
Yeah.
And I just don't.
I mean, I'm still going back to if I'm Colorado, though, and I'm seeing Ottawa do this, I'm not giving up Ottawa's pick back to them for anything. I'm willing to see how this goes. And that's the thing. If it's easy for us to say, and it would definitely be something I would think you'd have to explore in trading all these guys to get future assets and really do the rebuild right. But if you're doing that as Pierre Dorion, you're accepting giving Colorado possibly a top three pick to finish off this Matt Duchene trade. It's already not looking good with the other pieces, but if you give them somebody like Jack Hughes, who's going to go number one next year, I mean, that looks terrible. I don't know how you come out of that as a GM with your job intact. The optics on that would be awful on their own. So for the same GM who put the team in that situation to now roll back and go into a rebuild, I think that would be tough for him to swallow.
That would be a crazy pitch, Colorado. Give us Mark Stone for your first round pick. Like, given where it could be.
I'd want him on a contract.
Yeah.
But it would make you think, man, if I'm Colorado and I know Ottawa's out there trying to trade Mark Stone, I'm thinking maybe I should just hang on to this thing.
Sure.
Like, Mark Stone would do wonders for them. He's a great, and I still
fantastic,
think, underrated player. But I still think Colorado's kind of got this long-term thing going on for them. There's a lot of players under 25 years old on that team. The defense for them last year was what their huge weakness was. And now it looks like it's going to be a strength with these guys in the future, with Barry and Eric Johnson and Sam Girard, who they got, Connor Timmins, Cale Makar, the third overall pick last year. There's a lot of promise on that blue line now, so it's all looking great, and I don't know if you need to rush it, but it would certainly be something that you'd have to think long and hard about if you're Joe Sakic.
Man, hot stove is the most fun time of year. I was at the in-laws on July 1st, and I actually heard someone yell from across a ravine, "They got Tavares!" And then, you know, a few hours later, LeBron James was on the Lakers. It's a crazy and very fun time of
love
year.
Love it.
Which makes for fun podcasting. Absolutely. Well, that is all we have for you on this action-packed edition of T2T. We'll be a little less frequent now that things slow down, but I have to think we'll be back in the booth here before the calendar flips to August. At some point, we'll have to talk about however things eventually shake down with Erik Karlsson. Don't forget, you can always check us out on sportsnet.ca. Find us in iTunes. Check out our other great pods there, like Free Association, our NBA podcast, At the Letters, everything Jay's talking about. Speaking of trading away for futures, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Jays as the MLB trade deadline approaches. Of course, Elliot Friedman, Jeff Merrick on 31 Thoughts, a ton of great pods going on at sportsnet.ca. Check out Rory on Twitter, at Rory Boylan, myself, at Dixon on Sports. And come back next time for more Glass Rattlin' hockey action on Tape to Tape.